You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, guys. Just to let you know, I have a promo of another podcast that I would love for you to listen to playing at the end of this episode, so please stay tuned until then.
It's dropping. Someone described it like a duvet with a stone in it. It's just falling. If this is not an accident, this is a really serious, because she should have died. It's pure luck that she's lived. This should be a murder inquiry. So actually now we need to find out exactly what has happened to mine.
I think this case is unique out of all those I've prosecuted. If you wrote this as a novel, you would simply say it's too improbable to happen. But in fact, this is a good example of where truth was stranger than fiction.
Hi M&Ms, welcome back to another episode of Murder and More. As always, I am your host, Kira. According to an article written by Carolyn Lippo in April 2017 for Redbook magazine, traditional wedding vows can be traced as far back as the Book of Common Prayer, written by the Archbishop of Canterbury, Thomas Cranmer, in 1549. The vows have been adapted significantly over the years, specifically the vow we now know as Till Death Do Us Part. In the original version of the book, this vow was known as Till Death Us Depart, before it was changed in 1662 to Till Death Us Do Part. It was modified sometime after to what we now know it as, Till Death Do Us Part, and has remained a stable part of wedding vows ever since. Till Death Do Us Part is an ominous vow to make, with hundreds of thousands of divorces taking place each year. In Catholicism, Till Death Do Us Part is taken literally, meaning that only God himself can interfere with a marriage, and that the only manner in which a couple's marriage will end is if one of them dies. Emile Silliers also took the vow extremely literally and couldn't wait for God's interference to end his marriage. Thus, an extravagant murder plot was born. Easter Sunday 2015 was a dull and overcast day. Grey clouds lingered low in the slightly humid air, and the temperature sat at a comfortable 11 degrees Celsius. The bank holiday weekend provided the perfect opportunity for skydiving enthusiasts to pursue their passions. One such person was 38-year-old mother of two Victoria Silliers, an ex-army captain and experienced skydiver. Victoria had successfully performed over 2,000 jumps over the years, and it stood to reason that this one shouldn't be any different. She'd given birth to her second child 6 weeks earlier, and this was a perfect chance for her to get back into her passion. Victoria's husband, Emile Silliers, shared his wife's passion and was also an avid skydiver, with the couple regularly parachuting together. It was impossible for Victoria to know, however, that she was about to experience every skydiver's worst nightmare. It was 4:15 p.m. when Victoria Silliers was finally ready to perform her solo jump, just as she had done thousands of times before. 9 other people had successfully jumped out of the plane before her, with Victoria being the last person to jump. However, this jump wasn't as successful as the previous jumpers had been, and seconds after leaping from the plane, 4,000 feet in the air, Victoria realised she was in a crisis. The main lines of her parachute had become entangled, causing her to fall fast through the clouds. In anyone else, this would have instilled instant fear. However, her experience enabled Victoria to remain calm, as she knew she had a reserve canopy for these events. Panic finally set in, however, when her reserve parachute also failed to fully deploy, and Victoria's calm descent onto the Salisbury Plains turned into a rapid, spiralling descent that could only end in disaster. Being a qualified parachute instructor, Victoria had the wherewithal to slow down her descent from 100 miles an hour to 30 miles an hour, but even this speed would still cause her serious injury. When Victoria finally landed on the soft ground of a freshly ploughed field, she suffered spinal injuries as well as breaking some ribs, her collarbone, and a leg. Victoria spent 3 weeks in Southampton Hospital, where she underwent emergency surgery, but incredibly survived her terrifying ordeal. It's believed that Victoria's slight, 8-stone frame landing on the freshly ploughed field instead of the harsh, chalky Salisbury Plains were contributing factors in her survival. Detective Inspector Paul Franklin of the Wiltshire Police was alerted to the suspicious crash the following day. The police initially treated the crash as an accident, but a chief instructor who was present at the time the young mother of two crashed to the ground knew in his gut that this wasn't an accident, and that something sinister had caused Victoria's rapid descent to Earth.
So Mark Boyarda still is the chief instructor at Netherhaven Airfield. He looked at the parachute. So he had the main parachute, which he said was much more tangled than he'd seen, and he'd seen plenty of malfunctions. He said, I've never seen one like this. He goes, and there are these slinks missing on the reserve. He said, I just can't give you an answer for why that should be. He said, that shouldn't happen.
The canopy of the parachute is attached to the harness worn by the individual performing the jump by slinks or soft links, and it's without even one of these loops that a parachute is effectively useless. 2 of the slinks were missing from Victoria's reserve parachute for no obvious reason, rendering it completely ineffective. Slinks are the strongest part of the parachute. If anything, the lines or the canopy itself would have broken first, so it was inconceivable that the slinks would have broken or fallen off the parachute on their own. Due to this, the missing slinks quickly became the focus of the investigation. Police issued a press release in an effort to locate the missing slinks, wondering if perhaps they may be found in a field nearby. If the slinks had simply broken, this could officially be declared an accident as a result of a kit malfunction, but ultimately, the missing slinks were never located, forcing police to begin considering the possibility that they were removed on purpose, indicating foul play. The British Parachutes Association conducted their own investigation into the accident and failed to identify any reason why the parachute would have malfunctioned and were unable to rule out the possibility that the parachute had been interfered with. This conclusion gave rise to even more speculation within the police force that this potentially was an attempted murder rather than a simple accident. The result of this investigation forced them to perform a much more serious investigation into the suspicious crash, with a desperate need to identify who, if anyone, had the motive to murder Victoria Silliers. Straight off the bat, the police had multiple suspects that they were investigating, but 5 days after the incident, on the 10th of April 2015, a tip from one of Victoria's friends would turn the investigation upside down and potentially unlock the motive behind this crime. South African-born Emile Siliers was an instructor for the Royal Army Physical Training Corps when he was treated by physiotherapist Victoria for a skiing accident. In 2015, the couple had been married for 4 years and were living in Amesbury with their two young children, the youngest being just 6 weeks old at the time of the crash. On the outside, Victoria's marriage to Emile Siliers was idyllic. They had two beautiful children and a seemingly perfect marriage. However, under this veneer of perfection, the friend revealed that the couple had a tumultuous relationship, and very quickly, Emile Siliers became the focus of the police's investigation. Regarding taking the friend's statement, D.I. Franklin said, quote, "There are domestic abuse issues within the relationship that weren't obvious from the outside. We're not talking about black eyes and bruises, we're talking about unseen stuff," end quote. DC Maddie Henner went on to describe Victoria and Emile's relationship. Quote, "You treat somebody like a princess, and then you do something really unacceptable and underhand. But when you get found out, you treat them like a princess again. The woman keeps thinking, he's treated me really well, I'll let him off with that one. And then it happens again. It becomes that she is so squashed by it that she just accepts that that's what life is," end quote. With the revelation that Victoria and Emile's relationship was a volatile one, police believed he was a credible suspect. A femicide census conducted by Karen Ingala Smith revealed that 61% of women who were murdered in 2018 were murdered at the hands of their current or former partner or husband, meaning that police were entirely justified in considering arresting Emile Siliers for the attempted murder of his wife. Officers believed that Emile's arrest would elicit some form of response and display of emotion from him, such as anger, but they were shocked when they informed Emile that he was being arrested at his army barracks on the 28th of April for the suspicion of attempting to murder the mother of his two children, and no such emotions were exhibited. Instead, the South African-born army sergeant remained calm and composed and failed to protest his innocence as the metal cuffs clinked shut around his wrists and officers began searching his office. This complete lack of any form of emotion regarding being arrested or even being a suspect in the attempted murder of his wife struck police as extremely odd behaviour and made Emile look all the more suspicious. Emile maintained his composure during the interviews too. He declined to consult with a solicitor and happily permitted police to question him for 6 hours without protest. Emile's personality rapidly shone through and they began seeing their suspect in a whole new light. Quote, "He displays all the traits of a psychopath. Psychopath, sociopath, narcissist, extreme selfishness. He only cares about himself," end quote, said D.I. Paul Franklin. Very quickly, Emile became extremely open and honest with the police during the interview and readily implied that he no longer cherished his wife.
He starts saying, you know, "I don't want to be with Vicky, I want to leave Vicky. I'm fed up with her. I've got a girlfriend," and he named a girlfriend that he was seeing, it was an Austrian national, and he booked holidays with her.
This revelation stunned police, in part due to the manner in which he readily offered up the information. The police examined Emile's phone and the analysis corroborated his claims of infidelity. Emile was indeed having an affair with an Austrian national whom he'd met on Tinder when he was on a skiing trip 4 months prior to the attempted murder of his wife. In the months following the commencement of Emile's affair with Stephanie Goller and the months prior to Victoria's crash, the couple had been in contact almost daily, right under Victoria's nose.
And you're thinking, this is quite extraordinary, you know. What, your wife has literally just been released from hospital. She's in a body brace. You've got a very young baby, in a matter of weeks old. And you're telling police officers about your multiple affairs and your casual sex and your girlfriend in America. And that was quite striking.
Whilst Emile was happy to provide police information regarding his affair, details surrounding the circumstances of the crash and the hours leading up to the crash were slightly more difficult to extract from him.
Yeah, so some of the things he told us about when we asked him to give an account was that he was holding the parachute to Victoria. He had booked it out for her. And he also mentioned he'd taken his daughter to the toilet whilst holding it. Again, these were said very minimally and brushed over quickly. He skips over them. He's very quick and then he's off on a tangent. And again, at that point, it didn't mean anything to us overtly. They're just unusual that Vicky hadn't got it herself, that she was jumping.
Whilst police were questioning Emil, other officers were also interviewing Victoria, who was very compliant and provided a factual account of her accident. It quickly became apparent to police that Victoria had no suspicions of her husband's infidelity and therefore didn't share the police's scepticism regarding her husband's innocence. Victoria failed to offer up an explanation as to why both her parachutes failed, and it was quite clear she believed it was a simple kit malfunction. Meanwhile, police had to make the agonising decision as to whether they let Emil, who was currently under suspicion of attempting to murder his wife, go home to her and their two children. Ultimately, the decision was made to release Emil on bail, with the conditions that he had no contact with Victoria and went anywhere other than his home address. The police informed Victoria that they'd arrested her husband and that he'd been released on bail, providing he didn't attend their family home. Victoria was outraged by this decision and demanded to have her husband home to provide physical assistance with caring for their two young children. Victoria's abilities were strictly diminished due to her extensive injuries and body brace, and it rapidly became apparent to police that she was in denial that her husband had any involvement in the crash. It was late at night when police notified Victoria of her husband's arrest and subsequent bailing, so they assured her they'd visit her the following day and explain all the details in person. However, it was going to be tough to prove to Victoria that her husband had attempted and failed to murder her. Despite a confession that Emil was unhappy in his marriage and was conducting an extramarital affair, police had no physical evidence against him to conclusively prove he was responsible for the crash. DI Paul Franklin had three factors which contributed to his belief that Emil was the reason behind both parachutes failing, and he shared these with Victoria the following day. First of all, Emil had told police he was discontented in his marriage and was planning on leaving her. Secondly, Emil was having an affair with another woman, an affair that was deemed by police examining his phone to be a serious relationship, and had partaken in multiple extramarital affairs in previous years. In fact, at the time, Emil wasn't just conducting an affair with Stephanie Goller, but also his ex-wife and mother to his two middle children, Carly Siliers. Emil's phone proved to be the most damning in providing police with a real insight into his true character. Quote, "He can have a conversation with his wife about picking up the children or a bit of shopping, at the same time as arranging to meet someone he knows from Fab Swingers for some weekend fun, and ringing someone from Adult Work to see if they're available. Three totally separate conversations at the same time, managed in such a way that there was never a wrong phone call to the wrong person. When you see that repeated constantly for years, you see what kind of person he was." End quote. Finally, the analysis of his phone revealed that Emil had told Stephanie that he believed he wasn't the father of his and Victoria's six-week-old baby and was intending on having a DNA test to conclusively prove the lack of paternity.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Not only did these three factors contribute to D.I. Paul Franklin's belief that Emile had attempted to murder his wife, but it also provided a motive to be rid of his wife and gave rise to the possibility that Emile may attempt, and potentially be successful, in a further attempt on her life if police allowed him to return to the home the couple shared together. Paul Franklin vividly recalls sharing these facts with Victoria Silliers and recollects just how distraught she was.
You go through a career and certain bits of your career kind of just remain with you. And then meeting her that day was one of those. And you know what you're about to tell, what I'm about to tell her, is going to be devastating. And there's no nice spin on it. You can't make it nice. You can't make it easy. So rather than put it off, you do all that. And I tell her. It absolutely does. I mean, you know, she screams, she cries, she's really upset. You know, and it's heartrending to see. And then after sort of 5-10 minutes, and you could see it sinking in. And to this day, following 10 minutes, probably the only time I saw the real Victoria.
Finally, Victoria began to accept the possibility that Emile Silliers wasn't the man she believed she knew. Just as Paul Franklin was about to leave the home, Victoria offered up some information that would ultimately crack the case wide open and shock everyone involved. Just as Paul Franklin was about to leave, he asked if Victoria had any further questions she wished to ask. She didn't. However, she did wish to inform him of a slightly strange event that had occurred the previous week. Very matter-of-factly, Victoria looked at the detective and exclaimed, quote, "Well, you better know about the gas leak last week," end quote.
So now I'm thinking, I'm sitting in a house that's less than 2 years old, and a week before she falls out of a plane with a parachute they may be tampered with, she's now got a gas leak. I'm thinking, it ain't right. My gut reaction now is, this is not right. These are most likely to be connected.
Now police had not one, but two potential attempts on Victoria Silliers' life, and they believed now more than ever that they were at the hands of her husband. D.I. Franklin knew he had to investigate further to determine whether this was in fact a further attempt on Victoria's life, or whether it was simply an accident. He asked Victoria to come down to the station to be interviewed regarding the events of the week prior to her crash. Victoria recalled in her interview that a few months before the gas leak at their home, Emile had begun acting out of character and had made the decision to begin staying at the army base in Aldershot, Hampshire, where he was working, as he was tired of driving the 100-mile round trip every day. The evening prior was just like any other ordinary evening. Emile had helped Victoria put the children to bed before driving to Aldershot to stay at the army barracks to avoid the rush hour traffic. When Victoria awoke the next morning, immediately she knew something wasn't right and instantly recognised the rotten egg type smell in the air as gas.
As I come down in the morning, go into the kitchen, immediately I can smell gas. She goes, so I open the windows and it sort of dissipated a bit. And she texts Emile, who's at work, strange gas smell. And his text back was, have you turned the stove on? Which is quite incredible. He said, well, no, of course not. Why would I do that? And he was like, well, yeah, I'm at work, I'm busy, sort of. Yeah, you deal with it. And then eventually she did arrange for an emergency gas engineer to come out. And he found the nut on this like gas pipe where sort of hob was loose and just tightened it up slightly. He said a quarter turn.
This extraordinary and chilling revelation left police more convinced than ever before that Emile Silliers was a dangerous and callous man. Not only had he tried to murder his wife twice, but one of those times his own children were present in the house. Despite their mounting concerns, police still required physical evidence to present a solid case against Emile Silliers to the CPS. D.I. Paul Franklin obtained a warrant to search the couple's home, specifically to perform a forensic investigation on the gas pipe. This examination would finally provide police with their first piece of physical evidence. On the pipe, they discovered minute traces of blood, which subsequently matched Emile Silliers' DNA. Whilst this identified Emile as handling the pipe, it didn't specify when the blood had been shed on it, and he could have quite easily explained the presence of his blood away as a botched DIY job. So, the forensics team pursued with their investigation in an attempt to uncover conclusive proof that Emil had interfered with the pipe and caused the gas leak. And finally, they discovered the evidence they were looking for.
Mole grips had been put on it, had slipped and it had pulled back and built up, and the actual grip and the marks it left matched exactly to the mole grips.
This was the breakthrough police needed to prove that not only had Emil been in the cupboard where the gas pipe was located, but that his tools were responsible for loosening the nut that eventually caused the gas to leak out slowly. Police finally had physical evidence to pinpoint Emil Siliers as being responsible for at least one of the potential attempts on Victoria's life, and were able to bring him back into the station for further questioning.
You've told us today that you use mole grips, locking pliers, on the nut.
Yeah.
We recovered a pair of mole grips from your toolbox, locking pliers.
Okay.
There were no other similar tools.
Okay.
A forensic expert has stated in relation to the mole grips, which are exhibit NJB/5/MH/26, the mole grips locking pliers, that conclusively the locking pliers were used to forcibly grip and loosen one of the nuts on the gas fitting.
Okay.
Emil attempted to explain away the evidence and told police that he'd used the mole grips to both loosen and tighten the nuts in the past. However, the forensic evidence conclusively proved that this was untrue.
The same forensic expert has provided evidence to state there is no indication that exhibit NJB5MH26, the same mole grips and locking pliers, has been used to tighten either of the nuts in the gas fitting. So he's saying those pliers have not been used to tighten either of the nuts on the gas fitting.
Right.
Help me understand how that's possible from your account.
I don't know. If I turned it the wrong way, then.
You were quite certain. You said it didn't move.
Yes, it didn't.
You said you tried to turn it both ways.
Yes. I did.
But yet there's no indication that it'd be used to try to tighten.
Okay.
Explain that.
I can't.
In the face of damning physical evidence, Emil Siliers was unable to talk his way out of these allegations. However, police still had a lot of work to do and continued to work tirelessly to prove that Emil had also tampered with the parachute after the gas leak failed to kill Victoria. Additional texts from the analysis of Emil's phone came to light, which demonstrated that if Emil was responsible for Victoria's crash, it was without a doubt premeditated. A mere 6 hours after he discerned that the gas leak had failed to murder the 38-year-old mother of two, Emil quickly suggested they go parachuting at the weekend, already conjuring up a new plot to murder his wife. Obviously believing that Emil was a loving husband, Victoria readily jumped at the idea of reigniting her passion 6 weeks postpartum. This revelation is just another building block in the case against Emil Siliers and proves again that he is a cold, callous and dangerous individual. In an attempt to prove that Emil was responsible for Victoria's parachute's malfunctions, DI Paul Franklin approached two different parachute riggers in separate parts of the country. A parachute rigger is an individual who's trained to pack, maintain, and repair parachutes. Paul asked the two specialists to purposely attempt to render a parachute ineffective in whichever manner they saw fit. Both trained riggers demonstrated that a parachute could be tampered with in less than 5 minutes. Police quickly learned that Emil had successfully undergone a course in order to become a trained rigger, proving he had the knowledge to lethally sabotage both of Victoria's parachutes. However, despite this circumstantial evidence against Emil, police still needed to obtain physical evidence to demonstrate that not only had Emil tampered with the parachutes, but he'd also ensured Victoria used those specific ones. Victoria was interviewed for a second time regarding the tragic weekend that had forever changed her life, and once again, her testimony to police provided damning evidence against her husband. Victoria recalled to the police that Emile had organised for the family to go to the drop zone together on the Saturday to organise the jump. Whilst Victoria was ensuring the paperwork was all up together in the office, Emile went and booked out the parachute. It's believed that after Emile booked out the parachute, he managed to sneak it away for long enough in order to lethally sabotage it. The expert riggers had already proved that it took just 5 minutes to render a parachute unusable, and Emile had already confessed to the police that after he'd booked it out, he'd taken the parachute to the toilet with him, where he was completely out of sight of anyone else and had free rein to tamper with it. It soon became apparent that the low, grey clouds weren't going to clear, rendering it completely impossible for Victoria to jump that day. Victoria was happy to reschedule the following day and, I'm sure panicking, Emile managed to persuade her to put the parachute he'd already booked out into a locker, apparently in order to save time the following day. In reality, we know that the only reason Emile wished to keep the parachute in their locker overnight was because he needed Victoria to use it and to ensure no one else could utilise it instead. Victoria was dubious about putting the parachute in a locker, as she felt they should give it back, but, not wanting to cause a scene in public, she finally agreed, and the parachute was placed into the couple's shared locker. Whilst this was finally the evidence police needed to pinpoint Emile Cilliers as the attempted killer, they now required a strong motive, one stronger than Emile's wish to leave his wife, as he already had two failed marriages behind him. The obvious conclusion to his discontentment would have simply been to divorce Victoria as he had done before. Finally, police received the breakthrough they'd worked so hard to achieve and were finally able to prove that not only did Emile Cilliers try and murder his wife twice in 1 week, but that he had a strong motive to get rid of her. Police already knew that Emile wished to leave Victoria and begin a new life with Stephanie Goller. In fact, on the 7th of January 2015, police uncovered a text to Stephanie where Emile informed her that as of April, he'd be able to be more spontaneous. Was this because he'd been carefully plotting his wife's murder? They knew he was unhappy in his marriage to Victoria, but ultimately, the reason Emile wanted rid of his wife was the same motive thousands of people use each year to murder their spouse: money, the root of all evil.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It was discovered by a financial analyst that Emile's debt amounted to over £22,000, and the analyst would soon go on to uncover that not long before the two attempted murders on his wife, Emile Cilliers had increased both their life insurance policies to £120,000. This meant that if Victoria had died, he would have gained access to the £120,000 from her life insurance policy, which would have been enough money to pay off his mounting debts and build a new life abroad with Stephanie. Now police had enough evidence to prove Emile Cilliers had attempted to murder his wife on two separate occasions. He had the opportunity to perpetrate both attempts, and they'd also proved he had a strong enough motive to commit the murder. But just when police believed they had a strong case against Emile Cilliers, their concerns around their star witness, Victoria Cilliers, grew, and they began speculating whether she would testify against her husband. If Victoria still refused to accept that her husband had attempted to murder her, and she refused to testify for the prosecution, police had to ask themselves whether they would be able to secure a conviction. Nevertheless, police pursued their case against Emile Cilliers. 2.5 years after Victoria's near-fatal crash, in September 2017, Emile Sillyers was charged with 2 counts of attempted murder, and the trial commenced on the 11th of October that year at Winchester Crown Court. Emile maintained his innocence, however police remained fairly confident that they'd be able to prove the solidity of their case against him. Their confidence, however, would falter when Victoria took to the witness box.
I wasn't expecting her to go along and accuse him, but I did expect her to go along and just say what she'd said in the interviews. And then she got into the box and she gave her evidence. And then she just went off and said, you know, the police lied to me and I wanted to change my story and the police wouldn't allow me to do that. And you just sit there and just like, and it's really difficult. It's really difficult to hear. It's just sitting there going, this is not true. This, we never did that to you. We never lied to you. She's not saying Emile's innocent, but she's spiking the investigation effectively. And that's hard to hear.
It appeared that Victoria was under Emile's spell and essentially brainwashed by her husband into believing his innocence. This just increased the prosecution's requirement to present an extremely solid case against him, a task which they weren't afraid to conduct. At the same time, however, D.I. Paul Franklin knew that the jury would take Victoria's testimony into consideration and had to question as to whether the jury would be able to find Emile Sillyers guilty of attempted murder beyond a reasonable doubt based on her testimony. And Paul's fears were confirmed when the jury failed to come to a decision on Emile's guilt or innocence. This was a devastating blow for police. They'd worked tirelessly for 2.5 years for a conviction against him, and due to Victoria's testimony against the prosecution, it was a hung jury. As the jury hadn't acquitted Emile, however, the prosecution were permitted another trial, and the police had to work with the prosecution to ensure their case against Emile was bulletproof. In the first trial, D.I. Franklin had decided not to submit all the evidence they'd found against Emile, searching for and talking to sex workers, regularly visiting porn sites, and attending swingers clubs in an attempt to diminish Victoria's public humiliation. However, with the first trial going so horribly wrong, D.I. Franklin felt he had no choice but to submit these into evidence to prove that Emile was constantly searching for sex workers. The second trial began on the 11th of April 2018, 3 years after Victoria's near-fatal crash. Knowing Victoria would likely testify against the prosecution and accuse the police of lying to her for a second time, D.I. Franklin built a detailed timeline demonstrating all the times the police had made contact with her. At the end of the retrial, everyone was on tenterhooks, anxious for Emile Sillyers to be found guilty. Their prayers were answered, and finally, D.I. Franklin and his team's 3 years of hard work had paid off, and the jury were able to convict Emile Sillyers for 2 counts of attempted murder against his wife. Naturally, the police were ecstatic with this outcome. However, others present in the courtroom appeared to be anything but.
I mean, it was packed the second time, so the press box was absolutely rammed. Victoria had come back, so I've got Emile on my right, and the foreman stands up, and you're just almost holding your breath. And when he says guilty, it's just like, just release, you think, yes. And I look across Emile, and he's just completely blank, no expression whatsoever. And I look at Victoria, completely blank, no expression whatsoever.
On the 15th of June 2018, Mr. Justice Sweeney told Emile Sillyers that his crimes were, quote, wicked offending of extreme gravity, end quote, and went on to say, quote, your offending was extremely serious with your 2 attempts to murder your wife. They were planned and carried out in cold blood for your own selfish purposes. That your wife recovered at all was miraculous. She undoubtedly suffered severe physical harm, and she must have suffered psychological harm in the terror of the fall and since. She appears to have recovered from the physical harm, but not, having seen her in the witness box at length, from the psychological harm. End quote. He went on to sentence Emile to 18 years incarceration at Her Majesty's pleasure for both times he attempted to murder his wife and for endangering his children in the gas leak. This was the best outcome police could have received, with DI Paul Franklin stating, quote, "From the outset, Emile Silliers showed no remorse for what he had done. He lied all the way through the two trials, but in the end, justice won out with the guilty verdicts and now a long prison sentence. Emile Silliers is dangerous. He's a cold, callous, selfish man who cares only about money and his sexual conquests. Today's sentencing means that society is a little safer with him locked away. I also hope this result means that there can now be some closure for his wife Victoria and her family, who were victims in this. Wiltshire Police is dedicated in bringing offenders like Silliers to justice, as well as giving help to those who find themselves in subtle abusive and coercive relationships like the one highlighted here. Often, the abuse is not obvious because there may be no physical telltale signs or injuries. However, a victim suffering emotional and financial abuse, as in this case, can be just as deeply traumatised." End quote. Whilst police were extremely satisfied with the result of the retrial and were ecstatic to finally receive justice for Victoria, Victoria herself didn't receive the justice in such a positive manner. In an interview with ITV, she stated, quote, "I've been through every emotion under the sun. I've had plenty of time to think about things, which is probably why I'm not overtly angry, partly because I'm still in shock, slightly stunned about the whole thing. Also, I've got two young children, I'm the sole carer for them. I can't be angry, bitter, really emotional. I need to keep an even keel for them." End quote. In another interview, she stated, quote, "I have to go, I suppose, with the verdict. It's almost like peer pressure to conform. My family, friends, everyone seems to think they know more than I do. They see different evidence to me. He'd been unfaithful, he'd had issues with money, but that is not attempted murder. Yes, I'm hurt and angry, but can I see him as capable of murder? No." End quote. Emile Silliers is an arrogant, callous and dangerous man who showed no emotion regarding his wife's attempted murder and the manner in which he gravely endangered his own children. The only time Emile displayed any emotion during the three-year investigation was when he revealed that he'd broken up with his girlfriend Stephanie Goller. However, police believe this was just another attempt to manipulate them into believing he was something other than an emotionless monster. Police believe Emile Silliers had coercive control over Victoria, causing her maintained belief that it was inconceivable he was responsible for her attempted murder. Ultimately, this case serves to prove the role police play in protecting the public and the tireless and sometimes thankless work they put in to bring in the guilty individuals to justice. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a rating and review, and Patreon to consider becoming a patron of Murder & More. To interact with us, you can follow us on Twitter and Tumblr at Murder & More, Instagram at Murder & More Pod, and Facebook at Murder & More Podcast. To view the sources and pictures for this episode, head over to www.murderandmorepodcast.wordpress.com. Have a great week, and I'll see you all next week for another episode.
Hello, fellow podcast enthusiasts. My name is Rachel.
And I'm Neil. And together we are a husband and wife duo and the hosts of Mad or Bad, a true crime podcast.
Mad or Bad is a true crime podcast with a psychological twist, which takes a look at true crime cases from the UK and around the world. We cover murders, serial killers, disappearances, abuse scandals, and much more.
We have a special interest in murders local to where we live in England. However, we also love covering other lesser-known cases from around the world. We also love discussing psychological phenomena and how it relates to true crime.
So join us every Monday for a new true crime story where we discuss crime, murder, psychology and much more.
Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever else you get your podcasts.